What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And if this is the first time you are hearing our voice on this show, you have missed 29 minutes of incredible banter, news, earnings analysis from TKO, a value accretive portion of Rewind to Dynamite. What are you waiting for? Go XL now at postwrestlingcafe.com and you'll be all up to date on the Q4 earnings report, waiting, talking about the guidance for 2025, as well as chatting about all the latest happenings in NXT, some Collision, Fantasticomania, all things covered. Breeze is by speaking with you, Way.
What story was that?
I just said it breezes by when I'm chatting with you.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, if you're a fan of John Pollock's Mark Shapiro impersonations, we got a good one, I would say, during this Q4 earnings report breakdown that just happened this afternoon.
It was at 5 o'clock p.m. tonight. Yes. Wow. Had to move some stuff around, but made it onto that call because, you know what? I had to get my mug ready because it was time for an earnings call, and you know what that means.
The marketplace is frothy.
Mm. Yes.
Well, Wei, I also today was with Brandon Thurston, and on today's show, we went through multiple lawsuits. I know that's always a fun time when we're going through various complaints and such. We chatted about the consolidated shareholders lawsuit against the WWE, some minutes that have been... referred to in this complaint as well. The Ryan Nemeth suit against Tony Khan, CM Punk, and AEW. Plus, joining us on the show for the first time, Greg Oliver from Slam Wrestling, chatting with us about the whole, going back to 1996 when they launched Slam Wrestling, then breaking away from Sun Media, going independent, and Wei, you'll love this, maintaining all of their archives.
The man had quite the foresight to negotiate that. In the early stages of the internet.
We should have had him in our back pocket. I mean, that would have been helpful.
He should have been our advocate.
Yes. Really. But also a lot of history talk of Toronto wrestling from a guy that has been covering it for decades. So it was a great chat with Greg Oliver if you want to check out his interview on Pollock and Thurston today. Also, an AI tutorial on the wellness policy on Tuesday.
We did, yes. We just completed our latest edition of the wellness policy. We tried something a bit different this time where we just kind of went in. We had a great guest. His name was Nick Shiner. Is Nick Shiner. I don't believe he's changed his name, but he's a man of many talents, and one of them is actually he's about to speak for a panel discussing artificial intelligence. And we had a bit of a preview. We just kind of got into the topic, and we had a caller who provided great opposing viewpoint. It's really a topic I know something about, but not that much about. So to hear these two people that I would consider certainly more of an expert in the topic than me fully discuss, or at least as much as they can discuss in about an hour and a half, this topic was very enlightening for me, Jordan, and Neil. So if you're interested in the topic, you can go check that out right now. It's on our YouTube as well as the Post Wrestling Cafe free feed.
Did you design the logo using AI for AI?
We did for this. Yes, Neil Flanagan actually was tasked to use a prompt in order to create it. And we thought that thematically we would allow it this time.
Well, I feel like we are, you know, we each have shared custody of Neil Flanagan. You got him on Tuesday, and I get Neil on Thursday for the launch of the book club. This will be a special show for Double Double and Espresso members on the cafe. We are kicking off this series looking at the book by Brian Gwirtz. There's just one problem. It's a much longer title, but that is the summary of the title. Going through his years in WWE creative from 1999 through 2015. It's a very entertaining book, but it covers a lot of very important moments in WWE's history during that time period. And it's a guy that was there for all of these various events over the years and sharing his thoughts. So we're going to review that book, and we'll also link to the interview I did with Brian Gwirtz back when this book came out in 2022. So that's launching on Thursday. You can check that out. And we will also be dropping my History of WWE in Toronto piece. That will be free for everybody on Thursday on the site, and we will also be providing an audio version on the podcast feed. So lots of stuff to check out, and of course, Wei will be here Friday night with Neil after SmackDown, and Saturday with Nate Milton after Elimination Chamber. But tonight, we are going to the Front Wave Arena in Oceanside, California. 3,029 tickets distributed per WrestleTix, and we are starting with an ambulance. And who is in the ambulance? It is Cope. Has commandeered an ambulance, got his medical license, borrowed this ambulance, and he said that the Death Riders, this will be their ride tonight. Would he, in fact, live up to his word? We go earlier in the day, and MJF is sprawled out on... We have an individual working on his leg, which would be revealed at the end of this segment, what exactly he was doing, and speaks about Hangman, and that now there are only three letters he cares about. They aren't AEW. Those letters are MJF. And we go to see his blank calf.
Yeah. This was tattoo removal. So, of course, if you remember, MJF famously showed off his AEW tattoo after, I believe, he signed his latest contract. And this is him showing that it's removed. And I think whether or not he's sticking around or feuding with a baby face within the company, I kind of feel like this is probably a good idea. You know, just, I don't know if you ever want to like get your employer tattooed on your body.
Now, he showed us the tattoo in that segment.
Yeah.
Have we ever seen the tattoo since?
Oh, well, wouldn't it have been, wouldn't it be covered up by boots?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We saw it the one time.
What are you suggesting?
I'm asking if the tattoo was real to begin with.
It just feels like such an odd thing to, make up. I mean, I have reason to believe. I'm also a very gullible person, so I have reason to believe that it was real.
Okay. I'm just saying we never saw it again. And this was a clean calf we saw. It just seems to me it would have been
the laser removal technology is just really good these days.
Okay. I've never had a tattoo removed. So maybe that seemed like a pretty involved.
You keep
tattoo.
All of yours.
I would. Yeah. I've got my portrait on my back like Steve-O does. So Paige then pulls up in the Hangman mobile. These long horns on the front. And, I mean, what would you rather have, an AEW tattoo or drive around in this thing?
Probably drive around in this thing. I could take it off. And I guess you could take off the tattoo as well. You know, it just costs a lot of money. This feels like something that somebody would create, like a vehicle that somebody would create to attach to the Hangman Page character. You know, often like... toy companies would sell action figures, and just because kids love cars, they come up with like some sort of like bullshit car like attached to like Spider-Man or something. And this just feels like, hey, like he's a cowboy, I guess cowboys like trucks, that he must love bull's horns too because he's a cowboy, so they just slap that on. I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, it's comic book like, I guess
it's kind of cool. Yeah. Hangman just storms into the arena, and luckily there was an opponent already in the ring for him, and it's Aaron Solo, and Hangman pretty much performed a solo here as he hit a lariat and buckshot, pinning him in 54 seconds, and then grabs a chair and states, "There are three things I hate. Running out of biscuits." Agreed. "English ivy." The worst. "And when a little bitch with a leaking spray tan spits in my face." So he is waiting here until MJF shows up. And out comes
So just on those two things, okay? English ivy, like, I believe Hangman has a very active social media account where he only, like, tweets about plants.
Yes.
So this is, I'm sure, legitimate. He probably hates this plant and probably finds it very aggravating to have to deal with on a seasonal basis. The other thing is, I didn't realize this until I just pulled the clip up again. I believe that truck is an electric vehicle. All right. So this is, I mean, certainly fully the Hangman Page character, somebody who's a bit of a, I guess, modern environmentalist, but also a cowboy.
Well, that's wonderful. It's, you know, when the Paris Climate Agreement is being once again, the country is leaving it. Maybe Hangman is voicing his concern here through this.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
So he is waiting, and out comes MJF with the bloodiest towel as he says he will not fight Hangman now, but instead Hangman should go check on his friend. And we cut to Christopher Daniels, who I think had an axe taken to his head because this guy lost multiple pints of blood. And of course, wouldn't you know it, wore a white shirt to work as well today. I mean, pretty much a sitting target in a professional wrestling environment. So Paige wanders to the back, comes across Christopher Daniels, and then turns and asks people to check on him. And these two medics walk in within 2 seconds. They were just going to let this man bleed to death.
Yeah, always funny how it's the wrestler that manages to find them first, but I mean,
the whatever. Medics were just there. It wasn't as though he had to, like, search for medics. They were just there. Like, should we take care of them? Or I don't know. Do these wrestlers have health insurance? I don't know if we should touch them. This is a union job.
This is the point in the comment section where somebody criticizes you for being too critical of AEW by picking out these things for our entertainment purposes.
Well, tough. That's how I am presented, and that's the entertainment value I provide to this establishment.
Yeah, he does it for WWE as well. Everybody, okay?
Yeah, I equally hate everything. So
yeah,
just so you're up to speed on how this works. So yeah, we didn't get any update from Daniels. I'll presume he died.
Sure. Yeah.
Don Callis and Kyle Fletcher, they have their own suite in the arena. And after some highlights of Jericho and Bandido from Saturday, did you see this match by any chance?
I did. Yeah, it was excellent.
That fallaway slam moonsault that Bandido hit on Jericho, I got up off of my seat because I didn't know how he got him over on that. That was one of the craziest spots for a guy of Jericho's size and to get him over. It was a great match that they had. But that spot was insane. So Renee interviews Jericho and calls the match an instant classic. And Jericho wants an apology from Renee making fun of him last week. Callis and Bart Davis are in Jericho's locker room, and they have made a deal where Brian Keith is going to take out Will Ospreay tonight. So that is our match between the Bounty Hunter and Will Ospreay. And Callis is out there on commentary. Ospreay lands on the floor, favoring his knee, and then Keith takes the advantage, working on the lower back until Ospreay battles back, landing a stun dog and Oscutter, getting a two count, signals to Fletcher up in the suite, and then the Hidden Blade gets stopped by a knee strike to the chest, and Keith hits his Emerald Tiger Driver for a two count. There's a counter by Ospreay as he hits the Styles Clash and Hidden Blade as he moves to 8-0 in 2025, as noted by Tony Schiavone.
Good match. You know, I think about the level we've come to expect from a Will Ospreay TV match. Very satisfying. And then, you know, another good continued showcase for Brian Keith, who, I mean, AEW has a lot of guys sort of on that level where they're there to lose to the actual stars, but we might come out a bit impressed by them so that one day, like maybe many years down the road, they might actually get their own push. But Brian Keith, at least, you know, has a role. Versus not really having one before.
This is a very good TV match, and Keith got to show a lot in this as well before Ospreay got the win. And then Callis and Kyle wave him up toward the suite, so he goes, and him and Kyle brawl in the stands until security separates them. So they had a nice brawl here, and Ospreay's music played as they go to break, and we have the steel cage match coming up.
Great, like, looking shot of them brawling in the crowd in what looked to be a very full-looking arena. I believe Russell ticks out the number at about 3,000-something, but, like, yes, in this sort of environment, it looked packed. So, yeah, it looked – you could have fooled me that it was only 3,000.
They're booking very good buildings for what they are attracting. And if you're looking at some of their numbers, they're not lighting the world on fire with their attendance. But there are small gains if you're following this week to week that they are making. They've surpassed 8,000 now for the pay-per-view in L.A. So it's like, again, I don't think you are stating like they are through this dormant period, but there are small increases. And I think some of that would correlate that largely, I think the TV has been more focused towards this pay-per-view. And it seems that you are providing, I think, a more compelling product that, you know, Death Riders aside, you're not hearing too much pushback toward.
I also feel like there is a bit of an effect of like copycat crowds in that like the Texas crowds were so strong. You had that great Australian showing, and it feels like, again, like traveling out of those places, you're getting still really hot crowds. And I'm sure like diluting, you know, like your audience to maybe the 3,000, 4,000 most hardcore fans in one building is going to just make everybody feel that much more excited.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are getting together for a review of the new film Queen of the Ring, based on the Jeff Lean book. Plus, Rewind Away tackles the 2021 film Dune, Daredevil Born Again, covered by WH Park and Rich Fan. Plus, we've got Collision Course, Post Pro Res, and your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Join now, postwrestlingcafe.com. Momo Watanabe and Mercedes, there was a video recapping Momo challenging her and the match they had last summer where Monet won. And Mercedes is backstage asking, did Momo show up? And if so, you made a big mistake. And then she walks by Billy Starks, who is just here. And Monet knocks the water into Starks' face. And Starks steps up to her, calling her a narcissistic bitch. And then Momo appears. She actually flew all the way from Japan to challenge her in person. And with that, Monet runs away, but without the TBS title. So Momo says she wants this belt, and she is taking it at Revolution. So I'm glad she got her match. This would have been a very frustrating travel day for Momo to get here. And now she's like, I got to hang out here for a week and a half until I get this match.
I guess she's here to maybe do some sightseeing, probably to get over the jet lag, hanging out with Billy Starks, I'm assuming, at this point. You know, this is how her friendship was made, clearly.
Yeah. I guess the question is this a Billy Starks introduction to your main roster?
It felt directly like that. And now she did identify herself as an ROH superstar, so I'm assuming she's still going to wrap things up there. But like, this felt to me like a pretty deliberate attempt to introduce Billy Starks to a Dynamite audience, and I'm sure she'll be there at least in the build up to Revolution to accompany Momo Watanabe to be able to speak English, or at least like further the storytelling there. But it also seems like they're building up to her versus Monet relatively soon.
Yeah, there. As soon as this ended, there was a photo circulating of Billy Starks as like a little kid meeting Mercedes Moné.
Man, there's so many of these. Wow.
It's crazy. Like, this is...
Wow, awesome.
Like, how many years ago could this have been? And this is Billie Starks. Like, it tells you, like, just how young she is. Like,
so when she was NXT champion, I mean, 10 years?
She was called up in 2015. So we're talking over a decade ago. So it checks out. But it's just wild to me.
It's something that makes me feel really old. You know, now that, like, Sasha, Bailey, and, like, they have these photos, you know, taken of them.
Always take photos, folks. That's the best advice you can get if you're an aspiring wrestler. Just take photos of everything with everybody. Take videos. And
there's somebody that's going to take a photo with Billie Starks now. It's going to come back.
It's just the cycle of life.
Yeah.
The Outrunners against the Murder Machines, Lance Archer and Brian Cage. They had footage of the Outrunners going to visit the Omaha men's basketball team, and this got coverage on SportsCenter and Barstool Sports.
Yeah. Well, they were very entertaining here. I wonder how this got set up.
Dude, they were, like, destroying a garbage bin. I mean, this was very entertaining, and these basketball players looked like they didn't know what the hell was going on, but they were very entertained by these two men.
Can you hire them for your sports team pep
talk? I'm sure they do kids parties, motivational speaking, TED Talks. I'm sure they're available.
Archer's- I like that they made time to actually showcase this. I feel like there was a time where, like, the production wasn't necessarily as developed to be able to, like, provide a space to showcase this sort of real world, you know, like, buzzed about type of thing that makes your guys feel like stars. So I'm glad they made the time for this.
So the match itself, the Murder Machines just destroyed them for 90% of the match. They're double teaming Floyd as they take turns back and forth with strikes. Archer hits a choke slam, and then as he goes for the blackout, the Hurt Syndicate's music plays, and Archer is frozen in his tracks, leading to an O'Connor roll by Turbo Floyd, who pins Lance Archer, getting the upset in 8 minutes and 24 seconds.
Okay, so I know many people, myself included, will often groan at the musical distraction finish. I felt like this happened in a situation, and it happened quick enough that I thought it was plausible. And, you know, like, well done, you know, if I could even say that. And especially, like, doing this for the Outrunners, a team who I think, like, again, being paired up against the Murder Machines, this sort of finish is kind of made for this type of dynamic between these groups, where you have a fan favorite team who doesn't necessarily maybe get that taken that seriously against the team that has yet to lose. This is their first loss. So doing this sort of fluky finish, I thought was perfectly, like, good in that it elevated the Outrunners. I don't think it necessarily hurt the Murder Machines, because this is ultimately all in service to build them versus the Hurt Business anyway. So I kind of,
well, shouldn't the Outrunners be getting the shot?
Well, they are, but they're, I don't think they'll be beating them, beating the Hurt Business. So following that, I imagine you'll get the Murder Machines.
Do you think that this will be at the pay-per-view? We got a week.
Maybe there could be a three-way. I just don't, I hope by the end of this, the Outrunners aren't necessarily just, like, squashed by one of these two teams, and that they're able to maybe stay elevated. So three-way is a possibility, and the entire crowd maybe favors the Outrunners as these underdogs, perhaps.
Yeah, I was just looking at a much more straight line of Archer and Cage just win, and they get this title shot at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, they're choosing to delay that.
Okay, well, we got many more pay-per-views. Maybe they're going to stretch this one out. There was a feature on Moxley and Cope, and then out come Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana, and he claimed that this was his house when he debuted at Revolution 3 years ago. It's the end of Black History Month. I made Black History becoming AEW champion. I'm no one-hit wonder. And Nana's right. The title has not been my focus of late. I'm still the man, and he needs to right some wrongs first, and that means Ricochet. He says, we're done when I say we're done. So Ricochet comes out, and he states, Swerve, you had your chance. Winners don't chase losers. And he's getting tons of boos and just piles on the Padres, the Chargers deserting this broke-ass town. And then Nana informs him, I spoke with Tony Khan today, and you know what that means. And he makes an offer where if you give Swerve a rematch, the winner will be the number one contender. And with that, Ricochet just does a 180. Like, this totally changes his thought process here. My question is, why isn't he already the number one contender for beating Swerve? Beat him once.
I guess you have to negotiate for an official number one contender status because we don't have rankings anymore, John. So, I mean, a lot of people are enjoying a lot of wins.
Well, I'm glad we don't have rankings because this would give you a headache that Swerve has lost to Ricochet. He has lost to Bobby Lashley. And meanwhile, we're promoting Will Ospreay's 8-0 this year.
Yeah.
Where's that guy's title match?
Maybe Ospreay's not interested yet in this championship. He's got to deal with Kyle Fletcher first, right?
Okay.
You got to ask. You got to really beg. And Prince Nana is a very good negotiator. I think we've come to learn. I like this, okay? Like, you're putting... This was already, I think, a really hot feud, Ricochet versus Swerve. Now you're putting title implications into it, so we could expect... who do you think is actually going to win and so, actually
Swerve
get the title?
Needs to win this match. He can't lose a second.
I don't necessarily. You're probably right. But I also, because I think the title picture between Mox and Cope for me is in doubt, I don't necessarily know who you would oppose the winner of that particular match with, because depending on whether a babyface or a heel wins, that would affect the outcome of this one too.
Well, Ricochet is making it very clear we are not doing this tonight. And this crowd probably realized this was not happening tonight because Nick Aldis is not running this show. So we don't have any open spaces. So he says we're going to do this in a real California city at Revolution. And then after Ricochet leaves, Nana needs to speak with Swerve. I'm glad you're making the title your top priority. You need to go back to being the most dangerous man in AEW. And Swerve, I've taken a lot of bullets for you. And he lists off all the guys that he has taken bullets for Swerve to protect. But God damn it, I need that robe back to fix my legacy. Or else I just can't do this anymore. And he leaves Swerve to realize that I need to get this robe back or lose Prince Nana. We are now at the point. He desperately needs to explain the significance of this robe, because outside of the one time that Ian Riccaboni has brought up like Jimmy Rave, I don't think they have really conveyed.
I mean, like, the video earlier kind of did that with Ricochet, right? Like, they showed you footage of Nana, at least in ROH, with the robe. They did not show Jimmy Rave footage, which was kind of peculiar.
But outside of the one time Ian Riccaboni mentioned his name, they have never mentioned Jimmy Rave.
So it's significant, yes, because of Jimmy Rave. He's somebody who's no longer with us. But it's also significant beyond Jimmy Rave, right? Like, at least to this version of the Prince Nana character. And I feel like they've said enough. Like, I've had this robe for a long time. It represents me. It represents the embassy. It represents decades of my history in this world. So I feel like that's already been well established.
I mean, I would just book Ricochet in a match. Mm-hmm. And then just run out and grab this robe. Like, I think that this, he can't wear it nonstop. You know what I mean? Like, you're there's right. a way yeah. to get this robe that,
what if he keeps it locked in the locker?
Maybe they're going to put this robe on a pole at Revolution. Maybe that will be what is at stake here. But yes, Nana's at a crossroads of his career.
So introducing this, I think, was probably the most interesting thing about the entire segment. They are introducing another like tease of a breakup between Swerve and Nana. And this time, I wonder if they'll actually execute it, because I think
if they are, then it should be Nana joining Ricochet.
Exactly. And that's why I feel like Ricochet could actually win. You know, I think Swerve losing to Ricochet, even without like any sort of interference, like let's say he just somehow loses, okay, and Nana doesn't turn, I think also creates some really interesting narrative material, because I want to see a Swerve feel awful about not being able to do this for Nana. And to further that, if Ricochet destroys this robe, I really want him to do that. I want him to take those scissors and cut that robe up, just so I could see the result and the tension that, you know, will develop between Nana and Swerve.
Yeah, I mean, you could go multiple ways too. I mean, yes, the scissors are the obvious one, but given that it's Swerve, he could also light it on fire.
Swerve would do that? Why would... Oh, you mean Ricochet would
do it? Ricochet would do it.
Right.
You know. Renee interviews Hangman, who says that MJF has left, but when I find you, I'll either, if I don't run you over, you'll wish that I had. Mm-hmm. So he's about to kill the man.
With his electric vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, imagine getting run over by that.
Mm. It'd probably feel just as bad.
Undisputed Kingdom against Daniel Garcia and FTR. This was a very good match. They had Cole and Garcia showing respect at the beginning of this, but things would escalate. We had this spot where they go to the floor. All of them are brawling. Cole super kicks Dax. There are running drop kicks from O'Reilly and Garcia. Strong lifts up Garcia for a backbreaker onto the guardrail. And then Wheeler hits this crazy tornado DDT to set up the commercial break. Then things settle down. Dax just casually goes over to Adam Cole and gives him the middle finger. So it was on now. They triple team Dax. Dax then strikes back, goes for a sharpshooter on Kyle, who makes it to the rope. And then it's the Undisputed Kingdom with simultaneous small packages onto FTR and Garcia. The six are down again, and we go back to Garcia and Cole, who are going at it with punches. Strong and Kyle, we have Dax with the sharpshooter on to Strong as Kyle comes over, applies a guillotine onto Dax, and then Wheeler applies an abdominal stretch. So these four are all entangled in this four-way submission, allowing Garcia to try for the pile driver to Cole, who counters it into a jackknife cover, pinning the TNT champion in 11 minutes and 47 seconds. And while Swerve has to, and Ricochet have to battle to the death, man, Adam Cole just got a title shot in 30 seconds after this one. So that's happening on Collision.
This is the TNT, okay? Like, nobody really wants this one.
Yeah, this is a more attainable one. But yes, not at the pay-per-view, at Collision this Saturday.
Mm-hmm. A very good match, I felt. You know, a match like this.
I enjoyed this trios match quite a bit.
Yeah, this actually felt like a trios match that felt different from a tag team match, and that they took full advantage of just the amount of bodies that were in the ring. The way they increased the intensity, like with like big move, big move, big move, big move right before the commercial break on the outside was very entertaining. And obviously the four-way submission that tied everybody up so that Cole could go for that finish on Garcia, I thought was really well done as well. So, you know, it's been an effective way to get us to Cole versus Garcia, which I mean, I have mild interest in. To me, like, I think, like, to me, Adam Cole still has a bit of a stain attached to him, like, to the point where I like him. I still like him a lot, but I would say he's far from hot. And I would kind of say the same for Daniel Garcia as well. Like, he's had this title for a long time, hasn't necessarily done that much of significant, segments or just even, like, memorable things with it.
Well, Garcia offers his hand, and Kyle just kicks it away, so they get into this big shoving match at the end to heighten the tension between the two groups. And then they announced the TNT title match for Oakland on Saturday. Claudio is attacked by Cope backstage, and they fight into the arena. Yuta joins in, so it's 2-on-1 as Marina is watching on. And Claudio grabs a chair, calls for the concerto when Jay White intervenes, allowing Cope to regain the chair, spears Claudio. Shafir leaps onto the back of Cope, and Yuta enters the ring and goes for the Busaiku, which Cope gets out of the way, and Yuta takes out Marina Shafir by mistake. So Marina is out. Claudio is down.
I thought that was very well done, actually.
Yeah, so Marina's out. The Blade Runner is hit to Yuta, and then Claudio is left prone as Moxley is at ringside freaking out over all of this, but he can't enter because he's being held off. So Cope hits Claudio with the concerto, and then he goes to deliver one to Shafir. But as probably expected, Willow Nightingale comes out, and she is the one to deliver the concerto to Marina Shafir. So they have now eliminated Pac, Claudio, and Marina Shafir. And I'm thinking Yuta will meet his demise before Revolution.
Yeah, Yuta's sort of the easy one. You know, like you save that one for the end, right?
I think they might actually do a match with him and Cope rather than just the attack angle. That would be his right out. Get Cope into a match maybe next week before the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, the storyline from the moment they spelled it out, you kind of, you know, could predict all of these beats. But I mean, despite that, I'm actually quite enjoying this. I'm enjoying Death Rider hunting cope here, because I think the Concerto is like still protected and cool looking enough that it offers some sort of like, you know, significant like finality every time you're seeing one of these. So I don't really have any complaints. If I did have to nitpick, I felt like this segment coming right off of the last one, I was really left asking where was FTR to save Cope when Cope was, you know, had the numbers disadvantage. And I don't know if they've ever actually acknowledged.
Maybe Jay White was backstage and said, I got this.
Yeah.
Cleaner.
Yeah, that's sort of the canon. Jay White probably told Roderick Strong, hey, like, you don't have to, like, you could go to the trainer's room. Like, you got nothing left to see here, because Marina Shafir was about to get her head caved in. And Roderick Strong was probably just in gorilla, you know, like, like nothing was the matter. But they haven't really acknowledged that relationship on screen yet, I understand.
They're also having Moxley sell a lot more in these segments, and, mm-hmm. and I think that is working towards this match for the better. Like, whatever you think about this main event, I think most people have high expectations for the match itself, and how they're getting there is almost promising you that all the bullshit you hate about these Death Rider matches are going to be removed from this match with the run-ins.
Hmm. Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Excalibur states that Claudio and Shafir, they were not moving well during the commercial break. More on them later. Harley Cameron against Deonna Purrazzo late in the show. Taya is watching in the back. That was all that we saw of Taya. Deonna tries to get the arm, but Cameron escapes. And then Purrazzo is controlling through the break. Hits a lifting knee, Russian leg sweep for a two. And then Cameron hits the Enziguri and a shining wizard for a two count. Gets nailed with the powerbomb, kicks out. And the Fujiwara gets applied by Purrazzo, but Cameron counters with the roll up and then hits kind of an inverted crossroads for the win in 8 minutes to get the victory over Deonna.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was good. You know, like they're certainly focusing on pushing Harley Cameron following the great momentum they built for her and she's built for herself after the Monet match. And they seem to be doing that by allowing her to look more credible in ring. And I thought Purrazzo did a very good job of giving her that type of match. And, you know, like, she needs to certainly like showcase that she's a capable wrestler as a babyface, but I hope they also continue with the very entertaining out of the ring segments that ultimately are the reason why fans want to cheer for her.
Yeah, I think that they will have a, like, this to me has always been a difficult part, is like the follow up AEW has with some of these characters that catch a bit of momentum and then they build to the big match and they come up short, and it's trying to continue that. And sometimes they just fall into the ether. But with Harley Cameron, you have a lot of different ways to showcase her besides just matches that hopefully they can continue this, because, you know, she has shown a lot that you can work with as a character and as someone that is, for her level of experience, is fits in very well with this women's division. We see Claudio and Marina taken off in an ambulance as Cope, Willow, and White watch them being driven away. And the main event is Konosuke Takeshita against Orange Cassidy for the international title with Don Callis on commentary. Takeshita breaks his sunglasses, but Cassidy has a backup pair, which Takeshita takes those and gives them to Don Callis to wear. So we see some great exchanges here. There's a slingshot into a spinning DDT. Takeshita blasts him with this elbow strike, and then Callis slaps away at Cassidy for the heat behind the referee's back. There is a satellite DDT that is blocked. Then Cassidy tries to turn it into a stun dog, which is countered into a blue thunderbomb by Takeshita for a two count. They manage to get onto the desk where Cassidy hits a beach break and kind of breaks the table. It kind of bends, kind of breaks. It's these tables are...
For this sort of table, I mean, I feel like I don't think they're supposed to just shatter.
Not. These are legit reinforced tables, but this table at least had some give to it.
I guess I don't know why they would actually do a reinforced table rather than have one that would actually break easily, because
the pop guys, is the break. It's not so much just the impact of a spot on these tables.
Yeah, why would you actually make a table stronger rather than something that would be easier to break just for the
effect? I don't know, but it's both sides are doing this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure they have their reasons. But more than that, man, there was a piece of equipment that was stuck on the table for Cassidy's beach break, and the man dropped his hip right on this piece of equipment. It was just wincing really hard, so I'm sure that did not feel great.
They beat the count. Crowd's really hot for this. Orange punch lands, and then as Takeshita rolls to the floor, is hit with this flying DDT to the floor, and then Orange reclaims his sunglasses from Callis. Then Cassidy comes off the top right into an elbow smash. Up comes Cassidy into the stun dog, and he catches Orange Cassidy with a bastard driver. Cassidy gets one incredible near fall before the orange punch is ducked, and Takeshita hits the raging fire to win in 12 and a half minutes in, I thought, an extraordinary match. Man, this was incredible. I thought this was, I will say, among the best matches I've seen this month.
Not even year.
This would be of TV matches. This was very high up there.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think this was better than like the tag match we had in Australia at Grand Slam, but that's kind of the Osprey Omega tag match.
Yeah. So, you know,
but this was pretty damn great, I thought.
It was excellent. And I feel like this match, I don't think anybody was really taking all that seriously, at least in terms of result, because Kenny and Takeshita had been the ones building their feud. But, man, in terms of in-ring quality, we know Kenny versus Takeshita will be at a very high level. I don't think it'll be that much higher than this, because this was already at an incredibly high level. This was a pay-per-view level match, and I think one of the best matches I've seen from either guy, at least like on TV, but really, honestly, like anywhere. So it's something that continues to remind us that, you know, we talk about Kenny, we talk about Takeshita in the best in the world sort of class. I think Cassidy's up there too, you know, and he probably doesn't get his flowers as much because there's so much of the discussion around him is around the gimmick. But we're just talking bell to bell. He's so consistent, and obviously, like, we remember the international title run. So his place in the company right now seems to just mainly be like this guy, like sort of like on the like a tier below your guys actually in your A storylines. But man, bell to bell, he's just amazing.
Yeah, it's a weird comparison, but he kind of feels like this company is like Tomohiro Ishii. Like, he's going to have incredible matches with everybody. He might never be able to crack into that very top guy role in this company, but he's sort of right below it. And you can put him with almost anybody, and he is going to adapt his style and emphasize the strengths of others. And then when you get a pairing like this with a Takeshita, first time singles match as well, that they noted between these two, and it delivered and then some. Really, really terrific. I would say this, the trios match, and even like the Osprey Brian Keith, like those were three very strong matches for TV, but absolutely this main event was high quality.
Yeah, this one even beyond like most matches I think we get on television, even Dynamite, but like an episode of Dynamite, I almost, it's unfair, but I almost expect Dynamites to have this level of a match in order to actually feel like a really good edition of Dynamite. That's the very high bar that I think Dynamite has kind of set for itself. But this was the type of match that like really kind of takes my feeling about the show to a higher level. And I left the show feeling very satisfied as an AEW fan.
Well, if you weren't sold enough by the match, the closing image was Takeshita wearing the sunglasses with the thumbs up holding the belt, which was an incredible image. And they note that Takeshita and Omega is official for Revolution. Kenny Omega will speak on Collision, and also added to Saturday in Oakland is FTR against Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong as the show closed. Very strong edition of Dynamite. And this is the updated card for Revolution after tonight. It is John Moxley against Cope for the AEW Championship, MJF against Hangman Page, Konosuke Takeshita against Kenny Omega for the International title, Will Ospreay against Kyle Fletcher in a steel cage match, Mercedes Moné against Momo Watanabe for the TBS title, Tony Storm Mariah May rematch for the women's title, and Ricochet against Swerve Strickland. So those are our seven matches that we have so far, and this card is shaping up to be extremely high, even by the AEW bar for some of these pay-per-views.
Agreed. I mean, honestly, just Takeshita and Omega and Ospreay and Fletcher alone, I think was already enough to sell me. But then you get MJF and Page there as well. I think Moxley and Cope, I'm interested in it because I actually think there's a high chance of a title change.
And it probably has to follow all of this, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting, like the time that all these various matches get. Like, you can make the argument of, I would say, outside of Moné and Momo, like all of these matches getting 18, 20 minutes, and they're probably not all going to get that. But there's
Storm and May is a blow off. Like, it's the rubber match. So, yeah you would have to expect a lot. Big Boom Justice, or sorry, Big Boom AJ is going to be in the dark match. Is that right?
I don't think they've officially announced that.
Yeah, here's something from Fightful. Big Justice announced Big Boom AJ will be wrestling at AEW Revolution. He's going to wrestle in... Okay, anyway. That would be the main event. Forget Kenny Takeshita.
The Zero Hour, yes, it probably would be. So it looks like quite the pay-per-view coming up next weekend. All right, we are going to bid farewell on the YouTube channel for everybody. But hey, the party keeps going. Go XL, postwrestlingcafe.com. We're going to be taking your feedback and questions. So you can always check that out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday when we go live. But the show rolls on. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.